Okay. I have a privilege of Rabbi Jacobson and I first met over 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And he was not the international celebrity that we all know nowadays. Still a special, special person, special talent. We had a small group just sitting around a small table like this. There was a Chabad club at Yeshiva University, and there was a bacher from Morristown known as Yossi Jacobson. He used to come in and give, and he would talk in very, very exalted, complex ideas, but brought them in very simplistic terms that were relatable to all of us. I mean, a special memory, and if you recall this, Rabbi Jacobson, when Rav Aaron Soloveitchik Zatzal came.
I remember.
And Rabbi Jacobson spotted him out of the corner of his eye and says, come. And he grabbed it. We all went into the Reuben.
The room.
We went to the room back to his apartment. They spoke in Yiddish. So my Yiddish got a little bit better over the last 25 years. But basically, Rabbi Jacobson, coming from the tradition of Hasidus in general, and Chabad in particular, was having a conversation with one of the great Lithuanian rabbis, Rabbi Soloveitchik Zatzal. And they're comparing and contrasting Mesilas Yesharim versus the Tanya, what it was based upon, and different approaches to them. But again, enough introduction. We know Rabbi Jacobson had the zechus to come to Frisch last year. You guys remember?
Before Yom Kippur, I think.
Before Seder Mitzvah. So we're going to hear a little bit, and then we'll open up for some questions you guys can ask. But again, this is a very, you should realize what a special treat we have to hear from really one of the leaders and someone who has his finger on the pulse of our generation. And not only our class here, but with all my classes that I've been able to share your Torah with, it makes a profound impression upon them. So again, thank you for taking time today to speak with us.
Sure. Thank you, Rabbi. It's an honor to greet all of you from Frisch. And what else is on the plan today?
We just came from the Ribitzer.
Yeah.
And then we're going to get some food afterwards.
Beautiful. It's nice to be out of school for a day, no?
Yeah.
Okay. You want to do it more often, no?
Yes.
Yeah, every day. They can come to the shir every day. Okay, no, I'm just joking. So first of all, Bruchim Abayim, thank you very much. Make sure before you leave, the hamantashen we have in Shul are excellent. So take an extra hamantash. Thank you for coming. And some soup and some whatever you want here. Maybe they already have cholent. They start off cholent early in the week, or pasta or a tea or a coffee. Make yourself comfortable. And thank you for gracing our community. I'm just going to tell you what this place is. It's a bunch of tents, you see? So basically every 50 minutes they have a minion here. From like 5:30, a quarter to 6 in the morning. All the way to people who daven very, 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 very late after midday. So there's like every 15 minutes another minyan. So around, I would say, a few thousand Jews come here every morning to daven. And we have, so we're very honored to have you here this morning, almost afternoon, and thank you for joining us. And I hope you have a meaningful day and a lot of hatzlacha, success in everything you do. I know you wanted to ask some questions, but before I take questions, I'm just going to share just an insight or two that I think could be relevant to your lives and your future as our tomorrow, as the future of the Jewish people. And I hope it's something that can resonate with you, and you can even share this with friends or family members and other people that you're connected with in terms of classmates or friendships or familial relationships. In Yiddishkeit, in Judaism, everything is precise and meticulous. There's meaning in small details. We don't dismiss details as irrelevant. And there's a reason for that. Because Judaism sees every detail of creation as a manifestation of love. Meaning, we have 70 trillion cells in our body. It's not random. Every cell is constructed with design, with purpose, with intricate detail and precision, coming from a source that has infinite intelligence and love. So therefore, Judaism is a believer in details of life. The fact that details have the ability to manifest truth. That's why Jewish law has details in it, because all of life is made up of details. Every single piece of matter is made up from molecules, which are made up of the building blocks of what we call atoms. And each atom is designed in such a intricate and perfect way. And without that, our world couldn't exist. Our planet wouldn't exist. So the point of creation is that infinity, the infinity of Hashem, is manifested through every detail of creation. So the details of our own life are also part of that oneness. So that's why in Yiddishkeit, in Judaism, details are important. They're significant because they're connected to the collective whole. It's not just like there's a big picture. The small picture and the big picture are one. They're not different. The big picture is reflected in the small picture. So the details of your life, and every person's life has so many details, is capable of being a channel for the oneness of Hashem. The oneness of Hashem is expressed not just in big cataclysmic events, but also in the daily conduct of your life. That's what Yiddishkeit really is. And here we see a very interesting thing. The names of the portions of Torah are very meticulous. Every name has a message that captures the essence of that parsha. This week's portion is called Vayakel. Vayakel means he gathered, because it's a story of Moshe Rabbeinu, of Moses gathering the Jewish people and telling them the mitzvah of Shabbat, and the mitzvah of building the tabernacle, building the Mishkan. The next week's portion is Pekudei. Pekudei means senses, counting. Because in next week's portion, Moshe makes a count of all the donations that were given, and how they were used, every vessel, and how much silver was received, and how much gold was received, and how much copper was received, and what it was used for. He makes a count of every contribution, how much weight there was, and how it was used and appropriated and allocated. Usually we read Vayakel and Pekudei together, but this year is a leap year, so the year is longer, so we separate Vayakel and Pekudei. I want to talk about these names because they reflect something very significant in life. Vayakel means he gathered. Pekudei means counting. Do you see that the two names are paradoxical? Why? When I gather a kahal, kihila, what does kihila mean? A community. So let's say we have, you probably went to the Washington rally.
Yeah.
I mean, how many Jews were there? 100,000, 200,000, 300,000, right? So if you look at a crowd, right, it's a big crowd. You say it's one crowd, one kilo. What makes community community is, if you have the whole school, the whole frish coming together, what are there, 1,500 students? Less?
1,000.
1,000 students, Kanai and Hara. So when I was speaking there before Yom Kippur, we were in this cool gym, I think it was, right?
Yeah.
I was going in circles and circles. I hope my speech wasn't going in circles like some speakers. But I was going in circles. It was a very interesting experience of body coordination. When I look at the crowd, I asked the rabbi how many people were there, because I didn't count the people. I just saw one large audience. So when you talk about Vayakel, it's one community. That's what gathering means. We bring 1,000 people or 100,000 people or 500,000 people into a place or into the field, and it's a kehila. From many, you have one, like it says on the dollar, right? I pluribus unum, from many one. You ever studied the dollar? One day, the green dollar says from many one in Latin. That's what kehila means. What does pekudei mean, counting? How do you count? You always count individuals, right? If I want to count, there's a group of people right here, right? So I could say there's a group of fresh 10th graders that came to our community. Great. How many? I don't know. It's a group. And you're one. You all came together from Frisch representing one school, one grade, etc. One wonderful teacher and Rebbe. But now if somebody says, can you count them? I say, oh, okay, so let's do that. So we do Hashia, Samecha, Varech, or not one, not two, not three, not... Suddenly it's an individual. It's one person, another person. So Vayakel represents the individuals becoming one. What does Pekudei represent? Every person alone. Because every person is one number. If I just say, oh, it's a big group, that doesn't give me numbers. I need a count. And every person counts for one number, not more, not less. That's what a census is. A census is there's you, you're one. And there's you, and you're two. And there's you, and there's three. And there's me, and there's four. Vayakel Pekudei represent two different notions and ideologies in life. And here we come to one of the big questions of society. What is more important? The individual or the kehila, the community? Who am I? Am I part of a whole or no? I am individualistic. I am I, you are you. I got to take care of myself. In Pirkei Avos, in the Ethics of the Fathers, we have a contradiction. Hillel says, you remember Pirkei Avos, chapter 1, Em ein ani li, mi li. Chashani la'atzmi ma'ani. If I am not for myself, who will be here for me? But if I am only for myself, what am I? What is he telling me? Is he telling me to take care of myself? Now, if I'm not here for me, who's going to be here for me? But if I'm only for me, then what am I? What does Judaism believe in? Do we believe in Vayakel? Do we believe in Pekudei? The truth is, in different types of communities, there's a different emphasis. We know political systems, right? Socialism versus capitalism. What's the difference? Socialism says what?
Very community-based.
All community-based. There's a tzibur, right? You don't exist. You're part of the collective whole. You've read Animal Farm, of course, right? George Orwell? Yeah, so you know what happened to socialism and communism, of course. That collective concern became a living purgatory on earth because everyone is equal, but some are more equal than others. But in theory, what's the idea of socialism? Socialism is like the kibbutz movement in Israel. What was the kibbutz, the idea of the kibbutz? I don't own a car. You don't own a house. We're all in it together. And then we allocate the potatoes based on how many potatoes you need. Okay, you got to go shopping. We'll give you a car. The idea is there's no you versus me. There's no individual. There is a collective whole, and we're all part of it. Capitalism says what?
Individual.
Individual. Pekude. You are for yourself. You work hard. You make your own money. You build your own house. You have your own picket fence. You mow your own lawn. You take care of yourself. You make your money. You grow. You develop your potential. Yeah, you have to pay taxes. Okay. Somebody's plowing the snow. Somebody's protecting you from the enemy. Somebody's picking up the garbage. But it's essentially an individualistic journey. What do you think is the Jewish path? Which one? Vayakel or Pekude? What would you say?
The individual one.
The individual, that's what you see in Judaism, individual. Okay, everybody agrees or someone has a different approach? What do you say? Vayakel. Judaism is a kehila. Huh? You say everything. Okay, it's a good Jew. He wants the cake and eat it too. Anybody else? What do you say? Second one, community. So it's interesting, right? You have two Jews, different opinions. Very good. That's a very Jewish thing, right? So the truth is, it's not so easy to identify in Judaism because we see both. For example, Judaism believes in ownership, right? There's something called mine. You're not allowed to take it. But Judaism also says, al tifresh min hatzibur, don't separate from the community. And when I make money, 10%, I have to give
a
tzedakah, maaser, for charity. Do this, my money, I'll do what I want. No. God says, I'm giving you money, but part of it, I'm telling you, it's my money. Part of it, you have to give to charity, even though you made it. We have all these concepts of, there's a community. We come to shul, we learn, we celebrate with each other. Israel is now going through a major crisis. American Jews don't say, what's up to with me? I didn't know anybody in the south of Israel. That's not a Jewish approach. To the contrary, our brothers. Huh? How can I help? On the other hand, Judaism says, there's an individual. So the truth is, this is a very, very sensitive balance. And the balance is Judaism, as he said, doesn't embrace one or the other. Judaism always wants both should work together. But here's how it works together. Which portion comes first, Vayakel or Pekude? Vayakel. Isn't that interesting? First, you should start with the individual, and then you go to the community. It doesn't start that way. It starts with the Vayakel, and then it goes to the Pekude. In fact, this year it's separate. So this week we do Vayakel, next week we do Pekude. And the reason for that is because in Judaism, we actually start with the oneness. Really, we all come from one source. So we're all one. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad means the source of reality is one. If the source of reality is one, we all come from that oneness. So we're all manifestations of one. Like the menorah. The menorah had seven branches, but it was hammered out of one piece of gold. Why? Why couldn't you just make seven pieces and bring them together? Because the menorah of the Jewish people represents the fact that it's really one piece of gold. It's one. Everything is one. Everything comes from oneness. When we talk about Mashiach, what's going to be revealed when Mashiach comes? That the world is one. Hashem Echad means that there's oneness. You know why? Because everything is divine energy. Everything is divine energy. The DNA of every single creature is the Dvar Hashem, the divine energy that creates it. So when the truth of reality is revealed, we're going to see that everything is one. Everything is connected. Each one of us has a different role. As I said before, your body has 70 trillion cells, and each cell has a different function, but they're all one. I don't look at myself and say, who are you, Rabbi? Why? I say, oh, there's 70 trillion guys inside of me. That's a little... There are 70 trillion guys inside of me, but that's going to be a big headache. There's no 70 trillion. There's one person which has 70 trillion cells. I don't say, I'm a compilation of 248 bones or organs. There's one person who has different bones. It's one nation with different limbs. One song with different notes. One building with different bricks. One painting with different colors. Different colors, which you have to respect, but one. So we start off with Vayakel. We start off with the knowledge and the conviction that there is oneness. There is oneness in your life. There's oneness in all of us. There's oneness in the world. From here, you go to Pekudei. From here, now you have to ask yourself, and what's my role in this whole picture? Why is that important? Because if I start with Pekudei without Vayakel, I may allow my individuality to make me detached from who I really am. Individuality becomes isolation. Individuality becomes selfishness. Individuality becomes I have no connection anymore. I'm trying to be me, but I'm really betraying me because I let go of the relationship. You understand, guys? It's a very, very important concept. It's one of the great struggles people have in marriages. Is marriage Vayakel or Pekudei? Which one? What's marriage? Huh?
Pekudei.
Marriage is Pekudei, individual?
No,
Vayakel. Is it also Pekudei or only Vayakel?
Also both.
But which one do you begin with?
Vayakel.
Here's the key. Everybody understands a marriage is two people together. We do things together. We live together. We think about each other. If not, you're not married. But what happens then? Suddenly I say, one second, where am I? I'm doing for him and him and him or her and her. Where am I? I'm giving up my whole life. Pekudei, there's you. But the only way you could find the you in the marriage is if there's Vayakel. Meaning if I just come into a marriage and I say, you know, this is all about me. I have to find my expression. We're never going to be able to really bond. Because we're different people. When we realize that the greatest objective in life is that two people become one. But for two people to really become one, it can't be in a way that one of them is amputated or cut down. Each one needs to be able to shine his or her light in order to create that oneness. Now you have a stable marriage. What's so often missing in marriage is either you don't have the Vayakel or you don't have the Pekudei. You don't have the Vayakel means it's very individualistic based. I'll stay married with you if you can meet my needs. You're missing the whole point. We're going to get divorced in a week. The point is not you should help me. The point is we're one. Marriage is expressing the oneness of Hashem. But for that to be real, I can't be a robot. I need to be able to be safe. I need to be able to express myself. You understand? So Vayakel and Pekudei come together. If you're familiar with hockey, those who love hockey and know about hockey still talk about 1980. They call it the miracle on ice. For decades, the Soviet Union, Russia, was winning America in hockey, in Olympics hockey. Hockey was always a Russian victory, and it drove the Americans nuts. It was the middle of the Cold War, and Russia always had the upper hand when it came to hockey. 1980 is the miracle on ice. Guess what? The United States defeated Russia. Who was the coach who scored victory? Herb Brooks. Herb Brooks, if I'm not mistaken, he was a Jew. We like to take credit for everything. Herb Brooks. How did it happen? How did Herb Brooks take his team of amateurs and lead them to victory against the indestructible, undefeatable Soviet team? You know what happened?
Togetherness.
Very good. You know the story?
Yeah.
You watched the movie? What's the name?
It's Miracle on Ice.
Oh, Miracle on Ice. Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't, but I know the story. So there's one line there. This is what I want to quote. At one point, I don't know if this line made it into the movie, but I think it was in real life. Maybe it made it into the movie. But at one point, you know, he felt that the team was fragmented. And when you have a fragmented team, you know, in school, when a team is fragmented, when you're busy scoring for yourself and you're busy scoring for yourself, you're not going to win. The team has to work in unison. So what happens is he feels the team is fragmented and it's not going to work. And he used to keep them training night after night for hours and hours and hours. And in one night, one of the players said they were training for hours to the point of fatigue. They felt their feet were about to become paralyzed for life. And one of them turned to him and said, "Coach, how much longer are you going to torture us?" And he said, "I will have you practicing until each of you realizes that the name on the front of your jersey is more significant than your name on the back of your jersey. When you realize that, you can go home. And he said that made the shift. On the front of the sweater, of course, you have the name of the team. On the back, you have your own name. Your own name is important. But if you want to be a team, you have to realize that the name on the front of your jersey is more significant than the name on the back of your jersey. That captures Vayakel, Lahavdol. And it's true with the Jewish people. For us to be able to be successful as individuals, we always have to know that the name on the front of the jersey is as significant, at least as significant as the name on the back of the jersey. Not all Jews believe this. He said, what do I have? I'm just a regular Jew. I'm an ethnic Jew. I live my own life. October 7th created an awakening for so many Jews. What did they realize suddenly?
Everyone came together.
And what did they realize? That a Jew studying in Harvard University or MIT or UPenn, a Jew studying in Stanford, a Jew in Brown, a Jew in Yale, or a Jew in a city college, suddenly you represent Israel. You represented the Jewish people. That's what Jews didn't understand. Just because you have issues with Israel, whether it's anti-Semitic or anti-Zionist, well, I'm not getting into it. What do you want from me? I'm just a secular modern Jew studying at university. Why are you spitting in my face? Why are you telling me Hitler didn't finish the job? What's going on here? And suddenly the Jews realize the truth. The truth is that we're all one. We're all connected. It's not fiction. It's true. We are all Hashem's people. And the anti-Semites sees in every Jew a representation of the entire Jewish nation. This differentiation we make. I'm religious, you're secular, you're right wing, you're left wing, I'm a believer, you're an atheist, I'm for peace now, I'm conservative, I'm liberal, I'm democratic, I'm pro this, I'm pro that, I'm pro that. Those are all divisions that we make between ourselves. The enemy looks at the Jewish people and says, I see you all Jews, all Jews. And it's representing a very deep truth. The truth is there's a connection inside of us that is unbelievably powerful because it's real, it's authentic. Vayakel. In that place, you and I are literally one. I know a Jew, his name is Yair Einsbacher. He works in the IDF, anti-terror unit. And Simchas Torah, October 7th, he went to one of the kibbutzim. He himself killed a bunch of terrorists. And then he went with a group of soldiers to the houses to rescue the Jews that were hiding and were saved. And he said one of the homes, there was a group of Jews hiding in a reinforcement room. The terrorists didn't manage to infiltrate and they were alive. And Yair said, I asked them to open the door. We want to save them. They said, no, we can't trust you. Because what Hamas did, they learned some Israeli words, some Hebrew words, and they had Jews open the door. They said
fluent Hebrew.
A lot of them speak fluent Hebrew, and they said they're from the IDF, and they opened the door. So these Jews knew that, so they wouldn't open the door. And Yair said, we started to say different verses from the Torah, and different knowledge about that. They didn't help. Finally, we said enough psukim, enough verses to convince them that we're Jews. We knew enough to convince them. And he says, they opened the door. And Yair, he was interviewed, Yair Einsbacher, and he said, at that moment, I literally fell onto each Jew in the room and I hugged them and kissed them. So happy to be able to simply save them. And then he said, I walked out of that room with a feeling that I want to kiss and hug every single Jew I meet. Don't talk to me, he said, about fragmentation, about separation. I simply don't want to hear it. It was so moving to hear it because what he was basically saying is not that Jews agree about everything. We don't. We don't agree about anything. What he was saying is when you're in touch with your neshama, when you're in touch with your highest frequency, when you're in touch with your deepest vibes, when you see another Jew, you naturally want to give a kiss. You want to give a hug. You want to give an embrace. Why? I don't know you. I'm not part of your family. You never did anything for me. Vayakel. Because the name on the front of the sweater is as important as the name on the back of the sweater. Because the neshamas are really one. We come from one. The whole world comes from one. But especially our people was designated to reveal that oneness in the world. After that, go to Pekudeh. After that, become an individual. Flex your muscles. Become the person you're supposed to become. Live a successful life. Achieve your potentials. Grow and develop yourself ad infinitum. Become the person you can become on every level. But don't allow that to become detached from who you really are, your collective whole. And as you are young people, young, handsome, creative, powerful, young men and women in Frisch, as you continue to grow up, and you will constitute the Jewish tomorrow, the Jewish future. I believe these two names in this order carries a very, very relevant message to all of us. And that is, wherever you go in life, remember that attachment and connection is at the source of our existence. We were designed to be connected, not to be isolated. We were designed to be attached to each other, not to be disconnected from each other. We were designed to have the courage to come out of our hiding place and be in relationships, be in real relationships, have real friendships. In the right time, have real deep marriages. In the right time, give real connection to our loved ones, our children. And today, to be able to have that sense of connection with our Jewishness, with our people, with our homeland, with friends, with people who support us, to really have that gift of connection, of attachment. For some of us, it's hard. A coping mechanism may have been to be isolated. But the truth of our soul is that it wants to love. It wants to love and be loved. Vayakel. Then, in that context, we have Pekudei. Pekudei is our ability to be able to focus on our uniqueness. To focus on those things that require an understanding of who you are, why Hashem created you, what's your contribution to the world, how you will channel the light of oneness through your unique life story. And together, the Vayakel Pekudei creates people who are powerful but connected. People who develop themselves but never become egotistical. People who learn how to respect their boundaries and their uniqueness but never go into isolation and fragmentation and disconnection. We need Jews who really can love other Jews with all their heart, who really feel connected, who can take responsibility, who can be leaders, who can have their pulse, their finger on the pulse of the people, not just on their own pulse, and realize how much unity and togetherness is the call of the hour, even if there are disagreements, and there are. But also people who in that process appreciate the uniqueness of every individual, that could never be tampered with. Because the truth is, Vayakel helps Pekudei, and Pekudei helps Vayakel. They're not a contradiction. Because if it's real Vayakel, if it's real oneness, it can be manifested in your individuality as well. And if it's you being real to yourself, it's always going to go back to the connected, to the connectedness. And I hope and bless you that throughout your life you'll be able to manifest these two qualities with tremendous success and joy. And not just two separate qualities, but bring them together in your lives, where you can really become ambassadors for the Jewish people. Ambassadors of truth and authenticity. Ambassadors of love and hope and unity and healing. Ambassadors of faith, ambassadors of Torah, ambassadors of mitzvahs. But to be able to make sure that you, uniqueness shines always, and that you express these gifts through the talents, resources, and circumstances that God has given you. And I'll just conclude with this, and that is that this is true about us, it's also true about all of history. When you look about Jewish history, you can also see Vayakel Pekudei. Vayakel means that in many ways all of history is one. We are the same Jews who left Mitzrayim, who left Egypt. We're the same Jews who stood at Sinai. We're the same Jews who lived through Purim. We're still dealing with Iran 2,500 years later. We're the same Jews. It's interesting, right? Iran then wanted to kill all the Jews in one day. Today they also want to kill the Jews in one day through nuclear energy. Yimach Shema. We're the same Jews who went through Hanukkah. We're the same Jews who went through the building of the temple and the destruction of the temple. We're the same Jews. It's the same Jews. Literally the same DNA. The same DNA. The same hatred still exists. It's literally the same Jews. And on the other hand, every generation has its uniqueness. Every community has its uniqueness. And that togetherness is very, very powerful. On one hand, when you put on tefillin every day, remember, it's not just you putting on tefillin. It's your Zayda and your Elta Zayda, all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu putting on tefillah. When you celebrate Shabbos, it's not just you celebrating Shabbos, it's all the Jews from Sarah and Abraham till today celebrating Shabbos. It's their DNA, it's their genes being carried through you. When you light Shabbat candles, it's not just you individually lighting Shabbat candles, it's our mother Sarah lighting Shabbat candles. When I daven Shachris, when I pray, when I learn Torah, when I do a mitzvah, It's thousands of years of Jews with me doing the mitzvah. We're a continuation of thousands of years of history. Every single mitzvah is a continuing that. I'm not just my own little person, YY Jacobson, doing his thing. I'm continuing thousands of years of a story through me, through you. It's all one, Vayakel. On the other hand, you do it with your unique attention, with your joy, with your smile, with your unique contribution. That's the Kudeh. Together we have the miracle of Jewish history and of Jewish eternity. Thank you, and a lot of Hatzlacha.
Go ahead. Thank
you. You wanted to ask some questions?
Yeah, we've...
Go, Joe.
If you have, if not. Go.
What was like the Jewish take on eternity? Like, the world lasting forever. Is there going to be an end, or like, supposed to be like, the world's going on forever and ever?
Excellent question. So the Talmud says famously that for 6,000 years the world exists, and then after that, the seventh millennium, it's destroyed. But the Kabbalists explain that destroy doesn't mean, you know, that there's going to be another Hiroshima and Nagasaki, God forbid, and everybody will be destroyed through a nuclear bomb. Destroyed means the death of ego. The death of ego. Meaning there comes a point in history where our separateness is destroyed, and we experience ourselves as one with Hashem, with the Creator. In other words, when the doors of perception are cleansed, everything appears as is, everything is infinity. The fact that we feel separate from each other and from God is only because there's blockages that conceal the divine energy in everything. When that becomes revealed, there won't be any separateness. So what happens at a certain point of history is the world ceases to exist as a separate existence. It's the death of ego. Ego stands for easing God out, easing greatness out, right? Eliminating God's outlet in this world, which is me and you. So at that point in history, when we talk about the end of history, it's not the end of history literally, that everybody will be destroyed like in the flood, but that the ego will cease to function as something that separates us from our source. Yeah.
I wanted to know what the difference is between going on a Shabbat elevator and going in an electric car on Shabbat with a goy driving.
The difference between a Shabbos elevator that some people permit?
Some people do permit, or?
On Shabbos elevator. It's a big debate. So the truth is that I'm really not an expert on the engineering aspects, so I don't feel that I have the authority to give you a comprehensive and a genuine analysis. I can give you a superficial answer, but I don't. It's not a subject that I mastered. But if you, there's a lot on it online, so you can research it very easily.
So I did research it. I did see a few machlokets, but mainly everyone was for it, because if the Shabbos elevator stops at every floor, you don't tell it where to stop. It's already stopping at every floor. But then I also heard machlokets, if I get in the car with a goy and the goy opens up the door. So it's a weird saying. Just wanted to know your opinion.
Yeah. So it's not something that it's not my field. I'm sorry.
No.
I think one of the questions of the kids was, we made a Google Doc. One of the questions was, what made you decide to want to be a rabbi?
Me? You know Jackie Mason's joke? He said, if you have a normal Jewish child, you say, okay, let him become a doctor. If he's a little slow, okay, a lawyer. If he's very slow, an accountant. So I added, and if he's meshuggah, a rabbi. Okay, it's just a joke. What made me decide? Me personally? So, I don't know if you're going to believe me. It actually wasn't a premeditated decision. What happened was, it wasn't a premeditated decision. It's not like I planned it. And certainly didn't plan to travel the world and speak to people and lecture and have clips on TikTok every day. That was not part of my... There was no TikTok when I was growing up anyway. We were just getting used to computers. And the only computer game we had, I think, was Donkey Kong and Pac-Man. I don't even know. It may be below your dignity to play. But when we were... You still have Pac-Man? When we were kids, that was like the big... Pac-Man came out and everybody became addicted to Pac-Man. We actually believed in playing outside, climbing trees, and getting stitches. So what happened was, I grew up in the Crown Heights section of Brooklyn, at the feet of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, of blessed memory. And I had the privilege, in the last years of his life, the Rebbe would speak on Shabbat and holidays. There were no tape recorders because it was Shabbos. And the Rebbe would speak very long talks, very profound talks about all different aspects of Torah and streams of Torah, and often would talk about current events and hashkafa and education and psychology, Israel a lot, contemporary Jewish life, spirituality, mysticism, Kabbalah, Chassidus. And I had the privilege of being one of the team of oral scribes who would remember the Rebbe's talks and then transcribe them. So I would do that. And then later, people asked me to teach. You know, later the Rebbe fell ill and he passed away in 1994. I was still a young man. I wasn't married yet. So people asked me to teach his teachings and to share them. And I got more invitations. So somehow that's how my career developed, that it was not a premeditated choice.
The question?
Yeah.
Hey.
So, something that recently happened to my family, this is sort of like a halakha situation. So, my family has these china dishes, okay? A couple of them broke over the years, and the set isn't really made anymore. We decided to get, like, new plates and stuff shipped. We got them. We're about to put them in the cabinet and throw them in the boxes when we notice that there are scratch marks on them. So we spoke to our rabbi and he said, you already know the answer, they're not kosher. Can you actually kosher this? Can you actually kosher china?
What did he say?
He didn't say anything. He looked at that, but then a couple weeks or two ago, somebody said no. You can kosher it; it's going to be fine.
So OU has a website with all the laws of koshering. You could Google it, and they have all the details. You could look it up. It's very good. They have all the details.
But also, one more thing.
Yeah.
Earlier in the last year, I went to Great Neck and for Shabbos, and I'd never really davened in a minyan before, so I didn't know what to do. What would an Ashkenaz person usually do? Would they follow the minyan?
Oh, that's an interesting question. If you're in a different synagogue that has a whole different text of davening, So it's up to the. It's interesting. Some people follow the community. But it's fine. That may be hard because you may not know exactly what they're doing. So you could follow your own text of davening. Fundamentally, there's no differences. It's just a difference in a few places. It's not like fundamentally there's a big difference. Right? The same Torah, the same portion. They do Hagbah in the beginning. We do Hagbah at the end. They have a different type of Sefer Torah. You know, there's different text in this part of davening. But generally speaking, everybody says Shema. Everybody davenes Shema Nesra. The blessings before, blessings after.
It's really like the tone and like the way they sing.
That's true. That's true. But that's not a fundamental difference in the relationship.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're very knowledge on this topic, but why don't Sephardis allow conversion, converts into the community?
I'm not knowledgeable in this area, but I don't think it's Sephardim that don't allow. I think it's one group of the Syrian community. I don't think it's Sephardim.
Yeah, I think it's Syrian.
Also, Sephardim not. Sephardim means Jews that ultimately come from Spain.
Yeah.
That's not Sephardim. This is one group of Jews from Syria who, I believe, wanted to safeguard their communities from assimilation, so they made that custom. That's what I believe, but I'm not very familiar with it. But when I went to those communities, I was told about it. Yeah, they felt that that's the way of, you know, keeping everybody in.
Girls, any questions? Thank you so
much. Sure, have a lot of atzlacha. When?
Yeah, we love your videos.
Thank you.
We watch them in class all the time.
Thank you. Wow, okay. I'm very, very honored. I'm very honored by that. So I was teaching for many years, and then I think it exploded during Corona. Basically, I would teach her a class every single morning, and it was live stream, but there were longer classes, and a lot of people would join. And then, suddenly, you know, one day from another, we were all quarantined. And all the classes stopped, you know. Shul stopped. Schools, I don't have to tell you. You guys were the great victims of the experience, the experiment. And I was stuck at home for the first time in my life, not running anywhere. I would travel a lot. And all my connection with all my students, it was like all gone. I wasn't traveling, which is what I did. And I wasn't teaching, which was the second thing I did. I was teaching and traveling to teach, and it was all over. So I remember I called I called one of my programmers. I said, could you set me up right away? Like the first thing, could you set me up right away a studio in the house? I should be able to live stream. And he came and he set it up. And suddenly I realized there was a different level of there was a different type of thirst. Because everybody was home. So everybody's life was interrupted. Nobody was running, not bowling, and not for pizza, and not to the mall, and not to the stadium, and not to the movies, and not going out, and not even going to shul or school. And people were looking what to hold on to. And when I was saying things and they were going out, I just saw the feedback of what's happening. So, again, this wasn't a choice. It was like God's mission, like just, you know, any information I could send out that can help people and inspire people, that's it. Yeah.
Does every Jew go to heaven?
Does every Jew go to heaven?
Yeah.
That's a good question. Huh?
If like you didn't do any murder and like all the stuff.
You follow the Torah, you go to heaven.
Listen, our ultimately every soul makes it there, ultimately. But some souls have to go through a lot of journeys before. I said, Kol Yisrael, Yeshlam Chelek L'Olam Haba. Right? The Kabbalists say even the souls that it says don't, ultimately the soul ends up, but sometimes it has to go through a lot of journeys. Because basically, you know, a soul is very sacred, very pure. And if I contaminate it, it has to be cleaned. It wants to be cleaned, so it should be able to restore, go back to its natural sacredness. So there are sometimes cleansing that souls need in order to go back to their sacredness. But ultimately, every soul makes it back to its source. Okay, have a wonderful, wonderful day. It's been a pleasure spending a few minutes with you. You should have a lot of atzlacha and everything.
Yeah. Picture? Oh, yeah, yeah. Sure. Okay. Okay.